Before I get started, I'd just like to mention that I knew Larry Larson too, myself, and he's been gone for a number of years, but he's still very fresh in my memory. The thing I remember about Larry was his incredible curiosity and intellect and ability to share knowledge with other people. He was quite a guy. All right. I'm Keith Dorschner. I'm the IR4 Entomology Program Manager. I used to be the Entomology Program Coordinator, but I got a promotion to manager, although the pay and the responsibilities are the same. But the title's good because I've heard that when times get tough and positions get cut, it's usually the coordinators that go. So, and managers are safe. So I'm glad to be a manager. So do I just page up and down on the keyboard?
Just use the wheel right here.
The wheel?
I think so.
Oh, okay. All right, a little bit about the IR4 project. Probably most of you here know about IR4, but I won't go into the genesis of the quite strange and bizarre name we have. But the mission of the IR4 project is to provide safe and effective pest management solutions for specialty crop growers. And the IR4 project is actually a publicly funded research program, and it's really the only research program in the U.S. that develops data to facilitate the registration of crop protection products for specialty crops. And we've been in business now for about 45 years. So that shows that we do have some staying power. And the reason we really exist is because of the cost of registering pest control products on small acreage specialty crops is generally considered by the companies more expensive than the revenues that they get back. So the IR4 project was developed to fill this void. So what are specialty crops? Well, they're really all the fruits and vegetables, spices, herbs, nuts, essentially everything that is not a row crop like corn, cotton, small grains, etc. Now, just because specialty crops are grown on generally small acreages, that doesn't mean that they're low in value. In fact, I think this figure is a little old right now, but the last figures we have is that it was about $40 billion worth of sales in the U.S. from specialty crops. Nowadays, that number doesn't seem very large when we talk about $700 billion to bail out financial institutions, but still, $40 billion is real money, at least in my book. This is what we're currently working on in IR4, how our objectives and relative efforts are right now. We're about 75% in our food program, which is to register products on food crops, and we focus on reduced risk products. Of course, that's about the kinds of products that are coming out nowadays. They're all pretty much reduced risk products, but there are the occasional use where a older chemistry is needed, and we will work on those too. So we're not exclusively reduced risk products. We have an ornamental horticulture program that's about 10% of our efforts, and also a biopesticide program that's about 10%. And I think the biopesticide program has now been renamed to biopesticide and organic agricultural support program. So that focuses on organic production. And then 5% on crop grouping. Crop grouping is a way to do research on a handful of representative commodities, and then the registrations could extend to other entirely closely related crops. For example, if you do research on tomatoes and peppers, you can get a fruiting vegetable crop group tolerance that covers all the other similar crops to those. Who pays for IR4? Well, we are supported in large part by USDA, CSR, EES. ARS has a sister program that works with us. We get some support from the Ag Experiment Stations and a significant amount of money from industry in the form of grants. And we think this is a modestly estimated about $17 million a year. And then we take into consideration the indirect contributions that total about $15 million. And we get contributions from the agrochemical industry in the form of test chemicals to do our research that has to be characterized under GLP, Good Laboratory Practice Standards. We get technical support. Our host institutions across the U.S. provide employee benefits, utilities. But altogether, we think we're about a $30 to $35 million project. Okay, this is the, perhaps some of you have seen this slide before, but this is the general regulatory clearance process at IR4. Let's see, here we go. We start over here in the upper left-hand corner with a stakeholder out somewhere that defines a pest problem and identifies the solution. And then they request assistance from IR4. Then they make the request to IR4. People that can submit requests to IR4 is just essentially just about everybody except the agrochemical industry itself. We then take that project request that we get from the grassroots. We ask the manufacturers, the registrants, if they will support that project if we do the research to get it registered. If they say yes, then the project becomes researchable. We prioritize it. We have a process that we've been doing for several years now where the projects are prioritized. Those projects that make the highest priority then go into the field for work plots. We treat the plots, the crop with the test substance, the chemical, at prescribed rates, retreatment intervals, pre-harvest intervals, etc. The commodity is harvested, sent to the lab. The lab analyzes the samples. We provide the data to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. They do a risk assessment. They establish a tolerance, which is the amount of chemical that's legally allowed to be on that crop at harvest. And then the manufacturer adds the crop to the product label. That's the process. There can be challenges that arise at each one of those particular items in the process. Perhaps I shouldn't call them challenges I should call them opportunities. That's the buzzword nowadays. These are not challenges, these are opportunities. So let's start with the beginning of the process and see what opportunities lie there. This is where the stakeholder out in the field identifies a problem and a solution to the problem, requests help from IR4. A couple little comments here. Recently, I think this has fallen back a little bit, but commodity prices are higher nowadays. And this has provided incentive, excellent sales for the ag chemical companies. I think you guys are doing pretty good these days. And a steady and increasing investment in R&D, which is a good thing. So there are many new active ingredients in the pipeline. But some companies are doing a lot of cooperative work with IR4 early in the process, and others are kind of doing it alone. And I think we heard in the previous talk that you really want to, we want to know about these things earlier so we can get on the, we can get these things into the marketplace for the specialty crop growers as soon as possible. So the researchers that work with IR4 have to be familiar with these new active ingredients as soon as possible. Trends, another trend that we're seeing, and again, a reflection of the previous talk, is that the extension and ag experiment station people and infrastructure seems to be being downsized. Instead of state-supported positions, these are now state-assisted. State-located. Okay. That's even a step down from state-assisted. Expertise continues to change. New hires, they are expected to be self-supporting. Most of the work that the people that work with the IR4 project are getting small grants from industry to do some screening. These are not the types of grants that cause the deans to jump up and down for joy, let's say. And also, we see fewer people doing applied pest management work. And so who's going to be training the next generation of researchers? It's a challenge for us. Who will identify the solutions in the first part of the IR4 process? Who's going to identify them? IR4 has historically been a grassroots organization. The projects come to us. We don't go out trying to find solutions for pest control problems. The solutions come to us, and we get them registered. So fewer solutions for specialty crops, perhaps in the future, will be identified. And the source of many of the high quality, like I like to say, a high quality IR4 study may be drying up. So what's a possible solution? Well, how about a potential industry IR4 partnership where, and I think this has been, we are moving in this direction, to target pest control voids. We could focus on efficacy, crop safety, new technologies, identify potential solutions that could then feed into the IR4 process to initiate registration activities. In a way, our southern region, if probably several here know of Charlie Meister, our southern region field coordinator down at the University of Florida, he has convinced his superiors, when he collects money from companies or other sources to sponsor efficacy and crop safety work, he gets a match. I think a 30% match. So it extends the ability to do this research. So that's been quite fruitful, I'd say. Another possible way to attack this problem, or this bring this opportunity to fruition, is perhaps take a page out of the Canadian Pest Management Center's playbook. We have anybody from Canada in here today? No? No Canadians? Well, they have a sister program, very similar to IR4's, but it was modeled after the IR4 program. It's only been in existence for about 6-7 years. We affectionately call it IR4 North. What they have in their prioritizing process is what they call the APWS, the A priority without a solution. Now, essentially that is a pest crop combination for which an adequate tool to control the pest on that crop has not been identified. And they actually will fund a broad scale screening effort to try to find a solution for one of these pest control voids. In IR4, on the other hand, has no such mechanism. We can do some efficacy work. In fact, if you notice, then that whole process I explained to you at the beginning of my talk, there was nothing in there about IR4 collecting efficacy data or crop safety data. So IR4 can only do this under rare, special circumstances when a special program is funded. And we have done that in the case of Carzol and onion thrips. We did a pilot program to try to control onion thrips. Formetinate hydrochloride, Carzol, not exactly your most clean and green chemistry, admittedly. but it showed superior performance. So we took that on as a project, and I just submitted that petition to the U.S. EPA last week. And hopefully the EPA they won't like it, but hopefully they can come to a safety finding and we can get that registration for the growers. I think it supports about 6 or 7 Section 18s. But adoption of a similar mechanism that the Canadians have would require a change in the IR4 culture and the IR4 mandates. Okay, so the next step in the process is, okay, somebody identified a pest control void and a potential solution, and they submitted the request to IR4 for registration, yeah, but now we have to get the manufacturer to say yes. Well, like I said, major crops now have a major value now nowadays because of increased commodity prices. Some companies don't see specialty crops as very special anymore, and we really like to be special. So I was just a plea to please remember the specialty crop market. So here's a challenge here. Some potential solutions have been identified, but they're not registered in the U.S. So how can IR4 convince the a company to bring a material into the U.S., especially for specialty crops, that seem insignificant, but if you put the pencil to the paper and crunch the numbers, is that really true? IR4 can help to develop a business case based upon our experiences and contacts. IR4 submissions, as probably most of you know, are exempt from registration fees at the US EPA. So that's an incentive to work with IR4. And I know that this has been successful in at least one instance. There's one fungicide that was brought over to the United States for registration because of interest by IR4. And I think it's been a successful example of some things that can happen. Now, oftentimes, registrants will not label a specialty crop due to what they see as risks and even the corporate culture of the company. And the risks are almost always the potential for crop injury on a high-value, low-acreage crop. There's a lot of risk there, perceived risk for not very much economic return. And sometimes it's also performance. There may be uncertainties regarding performance. Some of the solutions could be indemnification language on the label. I know that EPA is working on this solution. Probably the registrants are more aware of this than I am. I think the indemnification language is already used on some labels by some registrants. I think Syngenta has made use of that. We'd be very interested in having support for field trials that we could sponsor through our network of researchers. But if sponsorship and these types of assistance to the IR4 is not possible, again, IR4 policy might have to change in regard to funding of efficacy work. And corporate culture, well, quite frankly, I don't know what to do about corporate culture. That's just out there. BASF is laughing. I won't say anything. And here's another challenge or opportunity. Sometimes our researchers, our cooperators, will find a innovative use for an active ingredient. that, for example, like a seed treatment, the seed treatment use that had not been considered. But the registrant is lukewarm to the prospects of that registration. So what can we do? How can we move this forward? Well, we IR4 can help prove the concept by sponsoring efficacy evaluations with cooperators, by working with leaders in the field like Alan Taylor with seed treatments at Cornell. But then again, this requires IR4 greater to emphasize efficacy work. We can help uncover pest control needs that are not generally known or appreciated. And the last one on my list here is actually, I think, the most important. We can help clarify the regulatory pathway with the Environmental Protection Agency. We've got fantastic relationships with EPA. There's a group in the Health Effects Division called the Chemistry Science Advisory Council, where you can, we can, companies do this too, but IR4 has taken many kind of really off-the-wall proposals to this this ChemSAC committee, and we have had some stunning successes with the ChemSAC. We could really help there. All right, so we got the company to say yes. Now we're in the field doing our work. We get our work done. We submit the package to EPA. This probably seems a good time to talk about the IR4 timelines. And this is a, let me turn the page here. In the past, the IR4 project essentially had no timelines. And this was a very sharp thorn in the sides of many registrants when it came to working with IR4. We would start a project 1 year, collect some data, look at the data, say, geez, you know, I think we need to do a little bit more work. So we'd schedule some more trials the next year, and this could go on for 6 or 7 years. We've now come up with the present is a 30-month timeline. So IR4 project, and this may not be too exciting to some of you, but it was a major breakthrough for IR4. In 30 months from the signing of the protocol, we would be submitting a petition to EPA for the tolerance and the registration. And that, I think, did more to increase the goodwill between the IR4 project and the registrants than anything else we'd ever done. But for the future, right now, I think the 30-month timeline is kind of moribund. In the future, I think each study for that IR4 does is going to have its own timeline. And why is this going to happen? Well, because under the Pesticide Registration Improvement Act that Congress passed a couple years ago, we need to, EPA has now takes fee for service. And when they take a fee for a service, they give you a date by which the a decision will be made. In the old days, EPA was kind of like IR4. It could float around for years. You'd never get a decision. Now EPA is promising a decision. So to help out EPA, IR4 has to take all the projects with a single active ingredient and put them together into one submission. We call it a bundle. And that allows EPA to do one risk assessment. Say we have eight crops we're trying to get on the label. If we submitted them all separately, EPA would have to do 8 risk assessments. If we submit them together, they have to do 1 risk assessment. And we like our good relationship with EPA, so we try to do that for them. And this means that we have to do massive amounts of coordination. We can also coordinate with the registrants. When you submit, if we know your timelines for submissions, we can also work to get our projects with that same active ingredient submitted to EPA at the same time so that everything gets done together. But in order for that to work, we have to be in lockstep, essentially. We have to really be communicating, and the doors of communication have to be open. What's that? About 5 minutes? There's also coordination that we do for NAFTA and worldwide joint reviews and work shares. And this requires even more intense cooperation between the company, the regulatory bodies across the world in IR4. Here's our 30-month timeline. I won't spend much time on that. And now the final process. EPA, let's say they've come to a positive safety finding, and we can get the label. However, not all of our crops might make it onto the company's marketing labels. They might be on the master labels, but they might not make it onto the marketing labels. And perhaps crop group tolerances were established, but only the representative commodities were labeled. So as now this is where IR4 can help even under the current structure. Once a tolerance is established, and all that's needed is crop safety and efficacy data to get a crop and or a pest on the label, we can do that. But it comes at the expense of magnitude of the residue studies. Our stakeholders have been very reluctant to give up the magnitude of the residue studies for efficacy and crop safety studies. That's just the way it is. So a couple final thoughts. Under the new Pesticide Registration Improvement Act, PREA 2, the IR4 waiver is now an IR4 exemption. That may not seem like a big deal, but it actually is. We almost were responsible for 25% of the PREA fees under PREA 2. It took an act of Congress to get our waiver translated over to an exemption, and now we're totally exempt from registration fees. But EPA is really cracking down on IR4 and limiting the amount of submissions that we can make with company data. It's becoming almost impossible for us. However, here's a potential here is that companies to submit IR4 data. If a company submits, I think it's 6 tolerance requests, there are no more fees involved after the 6th new use. So you could actually take IR4 data volumes and include that in your submissions and help you out, helps out IR4, and speeds up the process. And I think we're doing that with DuPont here very soon. How much time do I have left?
3 or so.
3 or so? Okay. I already talked about six specialty crops when you're going in for a registration gives you more years of exclusive use of data. Take advantage of that. Consider global work shares. Consider non-traditional data extrapolations, the so-called super crop groups. We have examples with spinosad was the first one that was a phenomenal success. And now we just had a big success with chlorantraniliprole, the rinoxapyr from DuPont. And also, IR4 can go in with reduced risk submissions with a simplified rationale, only about a 2-pager instead of a tome that you guys have to put together. And that gives you it gives us a 10-month review time versus 15. Now, I talked about a lot of opportunities, but it's certainly, things are really great with the IR4 project and the companies. I mean, this is our registration successes since 97. 97 was when the Food Quality Protection Act kicked in. We only had one registration that year. But you can see that over the years, we've increased our efficiencies and our cooperation with the companies. So now that we're averaging about 1,000 clearances a year. And 2007 was a little bit of a dip there for us, but we're roaring back in 2008, and we'll probably have about 1,100 in 2008. The future of IR4, if anyone here is interested in the future of IR4, and I hope everyone is, I know I am, we have a strategic planning conference in D.C. on December 9th and 10th at the DoubleTree Hotel, Pentagon City. You're all invited to attend, and you can help forge a new IR4 for the future. And so that's about it. Thanks for your attention.